wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints.
KBOO Community Radio is preparing for our legendary book and record sale. We're currently accepting your donations of books, comics, LPs, CDs, DVDs. Your discards are another person's treasure, and all sales benefit your community radio station, KBOO. So bring your donations down to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. weekdays. If you've got a larger donation, call us at 503-231-8032, extension 213, to arrange a time for a volunteer to come pick it up. Questions? 503-231-8032, extension 213, or email volunteer@kboo.org. The last day to donate is Tuesday, November 10th, so don't wait. Bring in those CDs, LPs, books, DVDs right away. And thank you for your support of Community Radio, KBOO, Portland.
Tune in to A Jazz World on Wednesday, October 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. to hear Jessica Lori and her ensemble perform live. We'll be speaking with Jessica about her West Coast tour, where she is these days, and hearing live from the Jessica Lori Ensemble. That's A Jazz World, Wednesday, October the 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Jessica Lori Ensemble, live.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:01. Coming up on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher will speak with Norman Cornett, an educator who developed a new way of teaching, which he calls dialogic, which is also the subject of an upcoming documentary. And at 11:30, host historian Professor Alfred McCoy speaks on Obama's geopolitical strategy for containing China. And again, thank you to all the members of the KBOO Foundation. For those who are not yet members of the KBOO Foundation, can remedy that oversight at KBOO's website, kboo.fm. You click where it says donate today. That's all coming up. So right now, stay tuned to KBOO Portland.
This is Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher at 90.7 FM Portland, KBOO. And we are trying to connect with my guest from Canada. The introduction was a lovely piece of jazz, of which he is not only an aficionado, but uses that style in his teaching method. So he will recognize that. So bear with us while we get in touch with him, and I will, you know, be interrupted when we get in touch with him. But let me at least tell you for now that he is a specialist in theology and culture, and particularly theology in the arts. And he's going to speak with us about a method that he developed of teaching, which is called dialogic, and it's a uniquely engaging the students in a creative way. And he is going to be in town for a screening and a discussion of a documentary about him called Professor Norman Cornett, Since When Do We Divorce the Right Answer from an Honest Answer? It will be shown at Multnomah University, room L101. The address is 8435 Northeast Gleason in Portland. And the film is by Alanis Obomsawmin, one of Canada's most distinguished filmmakers. The film is about the loss of his job at McGill University, where he was on the faculty of religious studies and taught for over 15 years, and over the impact of this dialogic method that he's discovered or worked with, and how his former students rallied around him. It was put out by the National Film Board of Canada. It was released in 2009, and it now screens in universities kind of throughout North America and Europe. And immediately following the showing, Professor Cornett will lead a dialogic discussion with audience members and field questions and speaking about his unique vision for education. Again, this event is free and open to the public, including all Multnomah University students and staff and faculty. So we are still trying to get him on the line, but I can tell you I previewed the film, and I'm very interested and excited to talk to him about his method of teaching, and I think some people will really relate. Many, many, many of the students that ended up supporting him and going to bat for him and are featured in the documentary around the issue of education. He starts out asking them to forget all that they've been taught when they walk in the room about the rigidity of education and what it means, and asks them to come with him on a journey that embraces the interesting concept of not worrying about tests and quiz and correct grammar. And I think we just have gotten in touch with Dr. Cornett.
Hello.
Hello. Michelle. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I've been able to give our listeners a current update of why we are speaking with you today. But I'm going to remind them that it is because you are coming in town Monday, November 2nd for a screening.
That's right. There'll be a free and open to the public screening discussion of the documentary Professor Norman Cornett, Since When Do We Divorce the Right Answer from an Honest Answer? And it's taking place at Multnomah University, and it's from 4:30 in the afternoon to 6:30 in the afternoon. Everybody's welcome, and the operative principle of the discussion is the same as my dialogic philosophy of education, namely this: there's only one wrong question. That's the unasked question.
And I loved it, because let me start by addressing a couple of issues. And the first one was personal. Having just been given this assignment 2 days ago, I was feeling a bit like your students in the film, anticipating the unexpected, but feeling safe in being able to have this dialogue with you. I'm counting on your dialogic style to give me that safety and freedom that you extended to your students.
Indeed, Michelle, you're bringing up a very important point. One of the first principles of my dialogic philosophy of education is this: creating what I call a non-threatening educational environment.
Well, it's absolutely true. And I'm going to just segue really quickly, and then we don't have to touch it again. But the other issue, which would be hard not to address, is the enormous change that took place in Canada just several days ago.
Oh, indeed. I get invitations to the Prime Minister-elect's office, Justin Trudeau, who's here in Montreal, Canada. His office happens to be in one of the most multi-ethnic communities in all of Canada. So when you get an invitation to go to an event at his office, it's like going to the United Nations. I should also mention, because I work as much on the relationship between religion, culture, and politics. I've led dialogic sessions with his predecessor, the Right Honorable Paul Martin, past Prime Minister of Canada, as I have with the premiers of Quebec. A premier is the equivalent of a governor. And so the premiers, Lucien Bouchard, Dr. Jacques Parizeau, I also worked with I work with all of the parties. You might know that here in Canada we have three major parties. The Conservative Party, which just lost big time.
Yeah.
But they had been in power for 10 years. The Liberal Party of Canada, which has just come back in after 10 years in the desert.
Yes.
And then the third option is the New Democratic Party. And I've also led dialogic sessions with one of the major figures and past leader of the New Democratic Party, and that is Dr. Ed Broadbent, who is a political scientist by training, but also himself a veteran politician in the Canadian scene.
Well, again, before we get into the particulars of Dialogic, and I screened the movie, it was absolutely fascinating, but I was very interested as this was occurring in Canada, because you used the course to address some very complex issues ranging from palliative care to jazz improvisation to Afghanistan, and especially religion. So it only would be natural that you would be aware, involved, and I would hope called upon to utilize your technique and style in the politics of Canada. They're lucky to have you. That's fabulous.
Well, thank you very much. That continues, and now it's I'm a religious religious studies scholar by training, and one of the founding figures in the history of Christianity, and particularly from the late 1700s on, was a person by the name of John Wesley. And Wesley founded what we know as the Methodist Church. And John Wesley had a saying that the world is my parish. And I would say, in the wake of the events that audience will see on Monday, the 2nd of November at Multnomah University, I can honestly say now, Michelle, that the world is my classroom.
Yes. Well, and that's thanks to the wonderful documentary film, that is absolutely true. And because of the necessity of the world getting smaller, and as it shows, and as you are involved in Judaism and Muslims and bringing native peoples and all kinds of different people together to talk about their own personal beliefs and ideas. I thought it was also interesting that Oprah Winfrey at this exact moment in time was doing a entire series on belief and to find the place, the balance, and the opportunity to discuss religion, theology, and personal, personal journeys, and how that is for many of the people that took your class, how they got started and what they were interested in. So, having previewed the film, I think the first impression is just how joyful and exciting and interesting you make learning look, but not just for the students, but for the fun and joy that you get out of it.
Indeed. You know, if you're a professor, that means you're a lifelong student. And so if I'm a lifer, I want to make this as interesting, as motivating, as enjoyable as possible. And at the institution where I taught here in Montreal for 15 years, I would walk by the library, and engraved in stone is a quote which became, to all intents and purposes, my motto as an educator. It's engraved in stone: beholding the bright countenance of truth in the quiet and still air of delightful studies. End of quote. So I would walk by that quote, and then I'd go into the classroom, and I would constantly ask myself, as I continue to do, how do we put the delight back into studies so that this becomes a natural high? And this led me to explore. I essentially see the classroom, Michelle, as a laboratory of cognitive acquisition. Cognitive acquisition is the technical expression for learning. So I'm asking myself, how do we learn? How could we learn better?
Yeah.
That's the driving force. And I do work a lot with filmmakers, and there is a film that became a pedagogical paradigm for me. And that film is entitled Field of Dreams. So I began to ask myself, how could I make education a field of dreams? And of course, the motto in that film is, if you build it, they will come. And that's what drove me to start working with people like the Prime Minister of Canada, or also with the Supreme Court Justice, Charles Gontier, that you also see in the film. I said, you know, we have education is all about possibilities. It's about potential. Let's make this experience a field of dreams.
Well, and like I said, I want to remind our listeners that you can not only screen the film that Dr. Norman Cornett is speaking about, but you can join in the discussion afterwards, and I think you'll be interested to do so when you see the students and their interaction with you. So when you recount in the movie an explanation for how you came to this teaching style and why, why don't you broaden that out for our listeners?
You've put your finger, Michelle, there on several important points. One is, as a professor of religious studies, in my classroom, which I refer to as a theater of learning, it became crucial for me that the student have a part to play as much as the professor. This is not a monologue. Education is a two-way street. It's a dialogue. And so how could the students take an active part in this process that we call learning, education? And I saw again and again, I saw students that were struggling. And in fact, with mental health issues. Mental health and depression is not reserved just for 30 and older. There are young people who deal with depression. There are young people, and I saw this right in front of me, young people dealing with anorexia, young people dealing with bulimia. I will never forget, Michelle, one student telling me, and I was teaching an 8:30 in the morning class, and the student very candidly said, there is no way I can face the day without a quart of red wine and three joints.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, Houston, we got a problem.
Yeah, yes.
You know, if that's how their day begins, day in, day out on the campus, then it behooves me, and this, of course, Michelle, led me to work, as I continue to do, led me to work with psychiatrists, led me to work with psychologists. How do we address what is called the felt needs of the students?
Yes, which not only is important in terms of the students, but who leaves and how they leave and go out in the world. One of the interesting techniques that you had that I was really in admiration of was you gave everybody the opportunity to rename themselves. Can you expand a little bit about that?
Yes, indeed. Well, I want to, you know, give credit where credit's due here. Angela Davis wrote a book entitled Blues Legacies and Black Feminism. Angela Davis is a remarkable scholar in her own right. In that book, she has an entire chapter on the power of naming in Yoruba culture in West Africa. And this got me thinking, now wait a minute, the people I teach are 18 to 22 years old. They're right in that identity crisis and what we call identity politics. All of this was coming to play. And how do we empower them to exercise their free agency, their moral agency? Well, it begins with their self-identity, with their own identity. How do they perceive themselves? And so the very first day of each of my seminars or classes, I invite the seminar members or the students, depending on the context in which I'm in, to give themselves their own name. What would you call yourself, and why would you call yourself that? It's the power of naming. In effect, you are appropriating your identity. You are articulating yourself, your own identity. And for university undergraduate students, this is imperative because they're faced with so much bodies of knowledge, so many facts, figures, statistics, theories, hypotheses. Well, how do you find yourself amidst all of this? And I see job one of university education at the undergraduate level is to enable the student to find their voice. If we've done that, it's mission accomplished. So I create a learning environment where the student finds their voice and articulates their own identity. Because you know what, Michelle? When they get their diploma, when they graduate, when they walk off that campus, tell me, Michelle, what course pack can they get? What bookstore can they go for a textbook on the rest of their lives?
Yes, I mean, it's a very fascinating look into, and I think there was the beginning of, and of course, being my age, I remember being informed by a broadening of this in the 60s and 70s, that there was a place to at least challenge that everyone should sit in a room and regurgitate information and have it just be this rote, you're the vessel and we're going to fill you up attitude. But it does seem like, you know, post 70s into the 80s and 90s, that it really became about efficiency and a job and how would the job look and if you could do it. And yet, I think the evidence, if we look back, supports the theory that it's really to learn how to learn and how to be.
Yeah. No, yeah. Well, you've opened up so many portals here of pedagogy, Michelle. The greatest gift an educator can give to a student, in fact, and I should mention, Michelle, I don't refer to the people in my, you know, in seminars or classes as students. I refer to them as fellow learners. We're just all along different paths in this journey called learning. Education is a lifelong process. But the greatest gift we can, and I see myself as a guide, first and foremost, the greatest gift an educator can give to a fellow learner is to learn to think for themselves. And that is the goal of the undergraduate education in the liberal arts program. And I want to make a clear distinction here that there's the notion of functionalism. As it was originally conceived, education was not to get a job. It was not for employment. And one needs to distinguish clearly here when we're talking undergraduate liberal arts education. The goal of that is to become a full-orbed citizen who has peripheral vision, who sees the big picture, who can size up situations and make an informed decision. That is separate and distinct from vocational education, or what's called vo-tech, which is very sharply focused on skills, aptitudes, job training. And so what we want to do, and there's actually, keeping in mind that I'm a religious studies scholar, there's actually a verse in the scriptures that says, iron sharpens iron. The goal of the university education is to sharpen their minds so that they in turn will sharpen mine, so that education becomes a collective, a community dynamic.
Well, and I think, again, that personally, an observation is that education became less about that, and it was less revered, in at least in the United States, for that, and more a function of being able to get a job and prove that you could sit in a classroom for long enough to be able to get accredited to fill in the blanks. And, mm-hmm.
And your point is well taken, Michelle, because when we look at the demographic evolution, as far as employment, as far as careers, as far as jobs, we now know that the average North American will go through three, if not four, different career changes. So therefore, it behooves us in university education to prepare them for the multiplicity of options that lie before them, because the reality is, thanks to modern medicine, we're living much longer. And I hasten to point out, Michelle, that the irony is that the future of education lies with the aging, because for the first time in the year 2015, this year, there are now more quote-unquote senior citizens than there are young people. And so there has been a paradigm shift in pedagogy, and we should be thinking more and more in terms of educating, of the education of senior citizens. We now know from neurological studies that neuroplasticity is alive and well with senior citizens. It's simply not true, quote, that you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Well, and
so
we
want to be encouraging our population to continue their education.
Well, and again, the way that they might be encouraged to do that is if they don't remember with hostility and angst term
yes.
papers and judgments and
yes.
criticism. Again, I want to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Dr. Norman Cornett about the documentary film called, of the same name, Professor Norman Cornett, Since When Do We Divorce the Right Answers from the Honest Answers? Again, the film will be screened on Monday, November 2nd, from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. It's going to be at Multnomah University campus, room L101. This event is free and open to the public. The address is 84, I want to get this right.
8435 Northeast. Do you say Gleason?
Yes.
G-L-I-S-A-N or
yes.
Gleason?
Gleason. Being a native Oregonian, Gleason.
Northeast Gleason.
Yeah. Well, we only have a few more minutes before we have to wrap up, but I do want to say that in observing the film, you exposed all of your students to such a varied and interesting panoply of events, museums, music, American jazz, that, again, I think in your overview of the necessity of education, it would be unthinkable that people wouldn't enjoy it if it's presented in that way.
My classes were full, and I have the privilege, Michelle, of remaining in contact with my former fellow learners who now have become doctors, indeed medical specialists, lawyers, scientists, business people. And the beauty, and because of this dialogic approach, Michelle, many of my students were science majors, and this was their very first opportunity to, as Andrew Lloyd Webber said in Phantom of the Opera, to open up your mind and let your fantasies unwind. So we opened new vistas in the endeavor to create a dialogue between the arts and the sciences, because I very purposely aim, Michelle, to address the phenomena of what I call the cloistered mind, in which, okay, well, this is my major, and I the rest, no. or that's what I'm focusing on, and the rest. But really, if we want to endow students with what it takes to live the rest of their lives, then let's give them peripheral vision. Let's enable them to see the big picture.
Perfect. Well, that's a wonderful way to conclude. I want to thank you for being with us today. I want to thank you for being in the world and being available to help all of us experience and enjoy a different way of looking at education. So again, for our listeners, Professor Norman Cornett is who I've been